Okay, the first source we're gonna have is the Yosefine Hagalot. Everyone remembers the famous question on the topic when Yosef saw the Hagalot that Yosef sent. All of a sudden, that made him aware of what the Hagalot was about. But why the Hagalot made him see that? Tell me in the chat or in speaking. But we're going to take first the Hagalot from the Yosef sees. But what was the... Okay. And what about Egla Rufa? So here are the printer for a second. Okay, yeah. Okay, the last thing, that's the classic thing. The last thing they were learning, there's two things. There's a play on words and there's a play on things. The last thing that Yaakov Avinu was learning with his father was the topic of Egla Rufa. It sounds like it's a question about a father and son learning. And then we see the Hagalot and it reminds us of an Hagalah. But what is there in the laws of Egla Rufa that relates to the story? I hope everyone noticed that. It's like real basic. Why Daske were they learning Egla Rufa when the last, why was the last thing they were learning? Other than a technicality. And I want to bring an example of how deep the Medrash is when you don't take it literally. What in the story of Yosef, other than the fact that we're learning Egla Rufa is a Mishnah, the laws of Sefer Dvarim. But what in the laws of Egla Rufa relate to what happened with Yosef? Okay, no one has mics today. You can write it in the chat. And then we'll read the Midrash inside in a minute. You understand my question? There's something about the law of Egla Rufa besides the fact there's Agalot involved. Yeah, exactly. The leaders of the community is what happens when you find a dead body and no one knows who's responsible for the death. Then the leaders of the community gather together, they shech an animal, right, and they put its blood in a Nachal Eitan, which is like the Midbar, middle of nowhere, and they say, we're not responsible for this death. And if you look at the story of Yosef and his brothers, it's not just a question of the Hagalah, it's also a question of responsibility, of not knowing who killed him. Remember the whole story, you don't know whether the brothers killed him or not, what happened to him. Now, I want to show you the Medrash here, which does it a bit from a different angle. So it says that Od Yosef Chai. It says Vayanat Hagalot. It says Otzon Hagalot Shishalach Paro L'Seifaso. Hayta Avodat Kochavim Chakukah Lehem. Amayi Yehuda V'Safan. This is the Medrash people are less familiar with, which is based on a beautiful analysis of the Pesukim. If you look in Parshas Vayigash when he sends the Hagalot in Parak Mem Hei, it says as follows. Paro sent Hagalot. Paro in Pasuk Yutet in Parak Mem Hei. It says Vashat Shavet Vesol Tasu Kulachem Hagalot Meretz Mitzrayim Vashachem Meshechem. And Paro sent the Hagalot the first time, and later in the Pasuk it says. Later it says in Pasuk Chav Zayin, they told him what Yosef said. So, who sent the Hagalot? Was it Yosef who sent him, or Paro sent him? So it seems like there were two sets of Hagalot. And what happened to the ones that Paro sent? It says Yehuda came and he burnt them. Now that goes later on in Jewish history, where Yehuda is the one who Shevet Yehuda, it's going to be Yoshiel, earlier Chizkiel, and then Yoshiel goes and burns all the Avodah Zarah and destroys the Avodah Zarah from the country. So that's alluding to that. This is Lamud Hashem at Yod Soret Avodat Kochavim. And then we see that Yehuda, who later on burns Avodat Kochavim, he was already doing that in the time of coming out of Egypt. Then we have the next one. What was Yosef telling them? Yosef was telling them, if your father believes me, fine. If he doesn't believe me, that doesn't believe you, that I'm still alive, remind him of when we were learning last, the last thing we were learning was Egla Rufa. Now, and then it says, Now, there's two things here. If you remember the Medrash when Yosef was sold, when they asked where was Yehuda, so it was Yehuda's turn to learn with his father. The Medrash is painting a picture where it looks like, which we'll see later on, in a couple of Midrashim later on, that not only the Avot kept mitzvot and I learned Torah, but the day-to-day life was very similar to day-to-day life in the time of Rashi, where father would learn with his son. And they have this idea that every day another son would learn with the father. One day it was Reuven's turn, one was Yosef's turn. This idea with the father learning with the son is a beautiful idea. And that idea is eternal in Judaism, the idea of a father and son learning together. But of all the things he picked, not just the Agalav, if Yosef's entire goal with the brothers and asking Binyamin to come and then setting them up and putting the cup in Binyamin's bag, was to get them to realize their collective responsibility for what they did, and the whole tshuva element of the story. It's not just the agala where you're learning a certain law, but the law itself that they're talking about, the law of Egla Rufa, where the leaders of the community, where they are supposed to be now, they're going to become the leaders of Am Yisrael, for them to take responsibility for it, and instead of saying Yadinu La Shafet Adam, to recognize that the whole purpose of that law is to be sure to be responsible for death or things like that happening. It's not just a cute little thing of a parent learning with a child. It's a whole approach to what Yosef was doing, what it was about. Now, in the last part of the Medrash, they add one more point in, where the father is comparing himself to the son. And it's going to come up several times in the Midrash in Vayigash. Again, it says, Vayat ha-galot ha-tchirach tchirach Yaakov, then v'am yisrael rav kochosh Yosef v'ni. The power of Yosef is greater than mine. Yosef went through more tzarot than Yaakov ever did. Yaakov went through trouble in his life, and he kept his belief. But Yosef being sold by his brothers, and being in slavery, and being by himself in Egypt for all those years, he went through so much trouble and suffering, you would think he would give up his faith. Notice in the Medrash, Yaakov realizes that Yosef is a bigger tzaddik than he is. Okay? He goes on saying he was always worried that maybe through all the sins he did, maybe God would leave him, etc., or he would leave God. And therefore he says, Yosef's koach is greater than mine. So that's the first medrash about Yosef and his son. Now look at the next one about has to do with the what they built the Mishkan with. I'll talk about the problem, and then we'll see the psukim inside. We're going to discuss now the beginning of Parat Memvav, when Yaakov goes down to Beersheba to bring Zvachim. He goes down, he stops in Beersheba on his way down to Egypt, and there he brings Zvachim to Hashem, he davens, and God gives him an answer. That's a classic story. There's a question later on in Sefer Shmot of when Am Yisrael comes out of Egypt and they build a Mishkan. Hey, you need a lot of wood, and you need high quality wood to get that Mishkan working, to get the Mishkan built. Now, listen, we'll see the pasuk now from David in the Midrash. It's Vayitza Yisrael v'chol asher bo v'yavo v'yashava. Reichon Allah. It's Vayitza Yisrael v'yavo. Yisrael traveled and he came to Beersheba. So the Midrash is followed by the Lashon, Vayitza v'yavo. Why can't it just say v'yavo Yaakov v'yashava? Very similar to Parsha Vayetze. Vayetze Yaakov v'Beersheba v'yelech Harona. So the Medrash asks Leichan Halach, where did he go to on his way to Beersheba? Amar Rav Nachman, Sholach Lakutz Arazim, Shonatav Ram Zikenu v'Beersheba. Where did he go to first? What was he doing in Beersheba? Where did he go to in Beersheba? He went to collect arazim, he collected again cedar wood, that Avram Avinu, his grandfather, had already planted in Beersheba. Sheva. Now, how do we know that Avram Avinu planted trees in Beersheba? So there's a hint to, anyone know what pasuk that is? Who remembers what Avram was planting in Beersheba? Okay. Okay. So if you look in, like you mentioned, this is Vayta Esher B'Beersheba. That's in the end of Perachav Aleph, but take a look there. If you have your Tanakh open, look in Perachav Aleph and Bereshit, and you'll see another thing that the Chazal just hints to here. It sounds like a cute little medrash. I will show you how deep it is. The end of Perachav Aleph, after he has his brit with Avimelech, it's another story about Avram and his interactions with other nations. Pasuk Lamed Gimel. It says, "Vayta Eshel Beersheva, Vayikra Sham B'Shem Hashem El Olam." Avram built a Eshel in Beersheva, and there he calls out in the name of God El Olam, and then the Avram does the Shem Nim Ravim. But that phrase, "Vayikra Sham B'Shem Hashem El Olam," Avram calling out God's name, it's twice in the beginning of the life of Avram Avinu, in Perek Yudzed Pasuk Chet. When he first comes to Israel, he says, "Vayitek misham ha'arim mikedem le'beitel, oholot beitel miyam v'ayim mikedem, vayivan shem mizbeach, vayikra b'shem Hashem." Avram calls out b'shem Hashem the first time he comes to Beitel. And in Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Daled, Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Gimel in Bereshit, it says, "Vayelech l'masa b'negev v'ad beitel, ad makom asher yasha me'olah v'tchila, ein beitel b'na'ai, ad makom ha'mizbeach asher asa shem b'rishona, vayikra shem Avram b'shem Hashem." And then also by the Eshel, but if you remember, Avram again is calling out B'Shem Hashem. Now, if that planning to Esha and calling out in God's name is the same thing that Avram does in Beit El, and Beit El is the place of the Mikdash, and the whole idea of the Mikdash is a place to make God's name known, and Alkama Shri Hashem, L'Shakim Shmo Sham, then Chazal is pointing to a beautiful connection between the Mishkan that Am Yisrael built in the desert, the Mishkan that they built in the desert, and the life of Avram Avinu, and connection of Avram Avinu to Yaakov. What are they saying? What did it mean? If you know the land of Israel and its rain and its topography, there's no way you can plant cedar trees in Beersheba unless you bring in tons of water, which they didn't have that system back then. Cedar trees grow in Lebanon because there's lots of water in Lebanon. A cedar tree with a lot of water being brought in nowadays with a watering system, you can maybe plant it in Hari Yehuda, if you're lucky, a couple of words, but they're not going to grow that big. In Beersheba, you can barely grow any trees. It's almost desert-like already. You can grow trees a little bit, but you're not going to grow cedar trees in Lebanon, all the way north, which is a lot of rain. In Beersheba, at the edge of the Negev, you're not going to be able to grow a cedar tree. So in Shad, it can't be that's where he got them from. But the idea that Am Yisrael is going down to Egypt, and then they're going to leave Egypt and get to Torah and build a Mishkan. So the whole idea of that process is to become a nation representing God. And when Yaakov, on his way down already, stops in Beersheba, Chazal connect that return to Beersheba. Also, Yitzchak, also, I should have mentioned, in Perachat Vav, Yitzchak goes to Beersheba, builds a Mizbeach there, and calls out in God's name the same way. And we'll see that's going to connect it to who davened in Beersheba. So Chazal are pointing out that the same connection between the Mizbeach, not just the Mizbeach, the Eshem, and the calling out in God's name, that was the life of Avram Avinu, and that was the life of Yitzhak afterwards, and that was Yaakov's hope, but he was never able to do that because of what happened in his life. But the idea of making a name for God, that idea, the Avot take with them from Beersheba, keep it with them in Egypt, and bring it back with them when they leave, and use that to build the Mishkan. So now we see the Medrash again. It says, "La'echan alach Amar Rav Nachman shalach l'chutz arazim shenasa Avram tekinot b'Beersheba." He went to cut down the and collect the wood from arazim, that the cedar wood that Avram planted in Beersheba. Hey, ma dichtiv in Bereshit vayta esher b'Beersheba v'krasham Avram b'shem Hashem kelolam. Uktiv abriach atichon b'toch hakrashim. Amar Rav Levi abriach atichon shneim shlosha amah ha'iba. It was one piece of wood that moved around that connected all the kashim together. One beam that went through all the other beams. How did they find a piece of wood like that? The Jews kept this piece of wood with them from the time of Yaakov. Look how beautiful the Medrash is. It's telling you that from the time the Avot went down to Egypt, when Yaakov was going down to Egypt, they're already planning building the Mishkan when they come out of Egypt. And the idea of keeping them a source of the Avot and keeping with them in Egypt and coming out all goes back to the theme of Brit Ben of Sarim, that when Amikul goes down to Egypt, it's part of a process to get them ready to come out. But the idea of linking the goals of the Avot and what they were about and how the Avot were like deceived, or what I like to call, what Chazal called Masavat Simil Abanim, but the prototype of the Jewish people, began with the life of the Avot and taking their ideas and then making them happen when we come out of Egypt and applying them later to Jewish history. Here the Medrash does a beautiful job again of connecting that pain in the story of Yaakov going down to Egypt and stopping in Beersheba first. Then we get to the Tzvachim in Hay, in the bottom of the first page. It says, Vayivach Tzvachim L'Rei Aviv Yitzchak. Omer Huna, at the Rav Yehuda made it in Tveria, Shalei Rav Yochanan Vayitzchakish. So they asked, when Rav Huna came to Tveria, if you know in Tveria, we're talking about early Amoraim. Rav Yochanan Vayitzchakish were living in Tveria when people would come from Vavam. They'd come to visit them a lot, and so that was a big center of learning, and Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish were the two big leaders, but they argued about almost everything. So Rabbi Yochanan said, what do we learn from this pasuk of Yitzchak Vachim Lelevi Yitzchak, why Yitzchak and not Elohei Avotav or his God or Elohei Avraham Yitzchak? Why Dafke did he make Vachim to the God of Yitzchak? So in the regular share, in the online share from this week, we talked about the simple Shat and Rashbam were because Yitzchak was not allowed to lead Israel at that time. And similar situation. Yaakov was worried maybe he's not allowed to lead either. So the Rashbam explains, and the Bochor Shor and a lot of other commentators explain very nicely that it was Dafka Yitzchak, the God who told Yitzchak, don't go down. Yaakov davened to that God to ask permission to go down. Well, he's asking permission. That's one classic approach. Here, Rabbi Yochanan brings the approach that Rashi quotes beforehand. We learn from here that he makes Vachim to the God of the Father Yitzchak, that a person has to honor his father more than his grandfather. That's what Rashi brings down, and then Ramban quotes, that's a nice idea, but Ramban says, they must speak, Ramban explains. That's not enough to explain what's happening. Ramban saying, what Rashi's saying is true, halakhically, but that's not the entire reason of why Yaakov brings Vachim only to the God of the Father Yitzchak. There's a deeper reason. Ramban goes into the whole idea of Brit Ben Avtarim beginning, and Yaakov realizes that Brit Ben Avtarim is about to start. Rish Lakish gives a different reason. Rish Lakish also argues with what Rashi brings down. There's a Brit HaShvatim Ikris. He's bringing a Korban for the Brit of the Shvatim. What's Brit HaShvatim? What's the covenant of the Shvatim? Anyone want to try to give an idea? What's it referring? What covenant of the Shvatim is there that the Medrash is referring to? And what that to do with the Korban Zvachim that he's bringing? So what brit? Whenever there's a brit in the time of the Avot, what brit is it referring to? It's a difficult one. I'll give you 30 seconds to try and someone try to give an answer. In general, in Sefer Bereshit, whenever there's a brit, it's talking about brit Avot, the brit between God and the forefathers to become the chosen nation. But if you remember from the time of Avraham Avinu, only one son was chosen. Only Yitzchak and not Yishmael and Bnei Keturah. Yitzchak had two sons. Only Yaakov was chosen and not Esau. But that can't go on forever. At a certain point, we had to have a critical point where one son is chosen and all the children are chosen and that becomes a nation. And God had hoped, God told that to Yaakov, but Yaakov wasn't sure. Maybe his sin, maybe it wasn't going to be him, maybe he had all the children, especially with Yosef being missing and presumed dead. And Yaakov thinking that Rachel was his main wife, Yaakov was worried this whole time. Maybe he's not chosen. Maybe not all the children are chosen. Maybe he did something wrong. And therefore, now that he knows that Yosef is alive and they're all going down to Egypt and possibly been in front of his beginning, he realizes that now, God has told Yitzchak, he'd be talking to Kareva Chazara, probably, and that he, the son of Yitzchak, is continuing his path. And now that Yosef is alive and all the brothers are united again, that's Brit HaShvatim. He's thanking God for Brit HaShvatim, that all the Shvatim are chosen. Now, why would that be a Tzvachim? Zevachim in Tzrat Chumash, in Sefer Vayikra, is a Shlamim. Zevach Shlamim. A Shlamim you bring, A, means Shlemut, completion, something being full. So that relates, that explains why Zevachim, the Rebbe of Yitzchak, the God who chose Yitzchak and said, told Yitzchak that only Yaakov is going to continue you. And then he'll be the chosen people. So therefore, to the God, and therefore he brings Shlamim to the God of his father Yitzchak. That's Rabbi Yochanan, that's Rish Lakish is supposed to Rabbi Yochanan. Now there's one more comparison of the father and the son, and the next one, we're on page 2 of the source sheet. It's Bar Kappa, Rav Yosef, Bar Patra. Each one has a different opinion. Chadmin and Amar. Yaakov is comparing himself to Yitzchak. There's why to say Elohim is Yitzchak. Yaakov is comparing himself to Yitzchak, and this is what he said, about why Yitzchak wasn't allowed to go down and why he could go down. He says, my father, Yitzchak, was always worried about, was only worried about his produce. Goren is the food you have. Since it was a famine, that's why he was going down. And God told him, you can't go down. Maybe I can't go down. My father, Yitzchak, played favorites between Yitzchak and Esav, Yitzchak and Yaakov. Yitzchak and Yaakov. Yitzchak, my father, played favorites between Yaakov and Esav, and that got him into trouble. And now I'm playing favorites again between Yosef and my other children. So for two reasons, for two very good reasons, Yaakov might think I shouldn't be going down. Because God basically told Yitzchak, don't go down just for food to Egypt. And playing favorites between your sons wasn't right either. Chazakeh v'yamarat, he says, no, I'm different. Why am I different than Yitzchak? Abba lo yalav el tzorchot nefesh achat ovad. My father had worried about himself. He didn't have a whole family to take care of. When Yitzchak went down to Egypt for the Rav, he had a small family, any family. He didn't have 12 shvatim and shivim nefesh. And the famine wasn't so bad. So therefore, even though he got told Yitzchak, no, maybe I'm different. Avani, yesh alay tzorchot shivim nefesh. I have to feed 70 things, and therefore I have a heter to go down. And therefore he has got permission. Even though you told Yitzchak no, come again. The other approach, Rav Yudin says, that there were five brachot, chamesh brachot b'chani Abba. When Yaakov stole the brachot from Esav, and Yitzchak gave him the brachot, Yitzchak told him, Yavdu chamim, yishavu lomim, evig v'lachach, etc. Connected nigvah l'Abba Kodesh Baruch Hu chamesh ha'pamim, b'chani. For each brachot that Yitzchak gave Yaakov, God appeared to Yaakov five times. So Rav Yudin Mariki Savor Shu Mat Mi Eni Motun Brachot. Rav Yudin said, Yaakov thought that maybe I'm going to get those brachot that my father gave me, Yavdu Chamim Yishachvod Le'umim. It turns out that Yaakov, even though God blessed him five times, those blessings never came true in Yaakov's lifetime. But what's Yaakov see? Now that Yosef is the leader of Egypt, what's he realize? What were the brachot that he got? Yavdu Chamim Yishachvod Le'umim Evig V'Lachecha is Yosef. But the Medrash is saying, something very beautiful. Why is he getting brachot? It's so deep what the Medrash is coming to say here. Why is Yaakov making bringing zvachim that Elohim Aviv Yitzchak? Why Yitzchak? Yitzchak blessed Yaakov when he stole the brachot from Esav. He said, Yavdu chamim, yishtachvu l'cholomim, nevek v'lachecha, yishtachvu l'bnei necha. Remember that blessing in back in Perek Chavzayin in Bereshit. So Yaakov thought maybe those are going to take place in his lifetime. Yaakov realized they don't take place in his lifetime. But what did he see? Those blessings take place through Yosef. Because Yosef now has fulfilled Yavdu Chamim, Yishtachvu L'Chalomim, Hevek V'Lachecha, Yishtachvu L'Bnei Mecha. All those blessings that God, that Yitzchak gave Yaakov, are now taking place with Yosef. And therefore, because he's going out to see Yosef, who's fulfilled Yavdu Chamim, Yishtachvu L'Umim, and he's adhered to his brother, therefore he brings Zvachim to the God of his father Yitzchak, who blessed him with those blessings, which are now finally being fulfilled through Yosef. And the last one, Rabbanan say, why Yitzchak? Look, a totally different direction. Reim of Frosh Yitzchak. Because Yitzchak went through the Akedah and was almost burned on the Akedah, when he brings in the Korban, he remembers the Shvut of Yitzchak, who was almost a Korban to God. They're a totally different direction why Yitzchak. Yitzchak, and Yitzchak in his closeness to God, an idea of Korban, not in his life. It was the first set of Midrashim relate bring korbanot to the God of Father Yitzchak, to the life of Yitzchak, or eventing Yitzchak's life, compared to Yaakov, that relate to the situation. And here he's saying simply, if you're bringing a korban, relate to Yitzchak because of Yitzchak's own personal experience with Yakedah. One more midrash with the name. Yeah, we have a couple more minutes left. If you look at the names in Perek Mem Vav, when the names come, well, I should, just in summary, I simply want to show you, if you're used to the classic approach about the why Yitzchak brings Korbanot to, why Yaakov brings Korbanot to the God of his father Yitzchak and Beersheba, Ramban has a beautiful thing about being of turning beginning, Rashbam makes no sense about asking permission to go down, but the other things we don't seem to think are so much deeper and so much, I'm going to say better, but add so much insight. And that's what you appreciate in the Midrashim. A deep diar, they're not just cute little stories, they're always pointing at something very deep, behind something thematic, some chumash, some underlying theme, which might be shot in the story, but it's definitely tying together very important points. So I just want to bring one Midrash and the next one, which is something cute. Binyamin has 10 children. And if you want to know how old Binyamin, sometimes you have the impression that Binyamin is some little kid in the story. Seems like Binyamin should only be 5-6 years younger than Yosef, especially if he's born when Yaakov is on his way back from Laban. So that's 6-7 years after Yosef is born. And if Yosef's 39 at the time, then Binyamin's whole story is 31, 32, somewhere between 30, 31, or 32. He's got such a little kid. And the proof he's at least that old is from the fact that when they come down with Yaakov, Binyamin's got 10 kids already. But look at the names of the children, which were very interesting. This is Binyamin Zelad, is a list of 10 children. The Shashamad Yosef in Binyamin, Shale, Ilach Bani. When Yosef and Binyamin were talking, you have children. Look how this brings the story to life. Remember, in Chumash, Binyamin never speaks at all. I'm pretty sure, yeah, there's never a quote of Binyamin ever. In this whole story, he never says a word. The Medrash is creating a conversation between Yosef and Binyamin. And look how beautiful it does it. So Yosef asks Binyamin, okay? Do you have any kids? Ilach Bani? That's a classic conversation. You haven't seen a brother in a long time. No, do you have children? Amalein, yes. Amar Kama, how? Amalein, Asara, I got 10 kids. Amar Amal, and what are their names? Just a real life conversation. Amar Lon, so he said, what are their names? Zhabi Zichadach. He said, I once had a brother. Well, you must have Naim Benimim. Actually, this Medrash is talking about before Binyamin knows who Yosef is. Now, this conversation that the Medrash is creating between Yosef and Binyamin is before Yosef met Binyamin. Before Yosef told Binyamin who he was. So Binyamin told Yosef, who he thought was this big emperor, I once had a brother. So you must have Naim Benimim. And he was such a nice, kind, wonderful brother. He was taken captive from me. He disappeared. Someone stole him. And all my children I named after that event. Vela Shnivlami Meni. He was swallowed up from me. Bachor Shaya Bachorli. He was my older brother. Ishbal Shnivlami Meni. Moshe Ishba. Gera Shagar Be'er Tacher. He's living in another land. Naman Shvimasav Naim Benimim. Achi Shaya Achi Vadai. He was definitely my brother. And he goes on. Each one. Rosh Eli Rosh, he was like a leader for me. And he was the first of his brothers. So what did Rosh say? Muftim, Shai Yefem Ma'od B'chol Davar. Mestecha Halachot, okay? Shemasu Shem, Shem Be'ezer Yaakov. He knew all the Halachot that Yaakov learned from Shem Be'ezer. So Chupim, Shod B'chupati B'lov V'loriki B'chupatai. I didn't make his wedding, he didn't make my wedding. So that's Chupim, Rosh Chupat. And the Erd, Shaya Domel, the Verd, like pretty, the Erd, Hashem Ki Ered Abni Ezer Shola, because I'm going down. He takes every single name here, looks something in some source in the Hebrew, and relates it to his life. As far as creativity, that Medrash is going to be one of the prettiest ones in that whole section. The last Medrash we're going to do is more of a famous one. So, I wanted to bring one more Medrash, which is, I don't think it's so deep. I think it's deep psychologically. It's far as creativity. It's a masterpiece of taking all the names of Binyamin's children and relating to his connection to the fact that he was missing his older brother, was taken captive from him, taken away from him early in his life, and how that missing brother affected his entire life and how he named all his children after that event. The last topic, which comes up at the end of the parsha, is Yaakov sends Yehuda to prepare the way for things in Goshen. So the pasuk, which everyone knows, that Yehuda shalach lefanav goshna, Yaakov sent Yehuda ahead of the group to get things ready. He sent him to scout out the area and get things ready. And simple pshat, to get the place ready so when everyone comes, things are set up. So he sends a macher to get things ready, and Yehuda's a macher. So Rav Chanina and the brother of Acha Rav Chanina, two opinions, Rav Chanina and Rav Dacha. I'm sorry. Rabbi Chanina says, Latkilo Bikira, he went there to get the house ready. That's simple. Basically, to get the house ready, get things prepared in a physical sense. The Chadamar, Latkilo Bikva, to set up yeshiva. Shemo Rebbe Divrei Torah. Shua Shvatim Lom Dimbo. You move to a new place, this is so classic, if you're talking about a medrash, which is projecting future Judaism. The Jews are always moving from country to country. When you move to a new country, the first thing the Jewish nation has to set up, you open up a base medrash, you open up a yeshiva. If Judaism is going to move from one place to the next, you're moving, you're traveling, the first thing you set up somebody that have the yeshiva set up. Now both are needed, but that opinion to get things ready for learning is so beautiful. Then he proves, Teda Zachashu came. How do we know this is true? Shkiva Shalach Yosef Metzlo. Haya Yodea Beza Peret Pirashmuno. Shem Shaneoto. Kiva Sha Bo Ache Yosef Etzlo. Vamu Lo Odi Yosef Chai. Vata Zibo Nizka Beza Peret Pirashmuno. Vam Rabzo Yodea Nisha Peret Egla Rufa Pirashmuno Yosef. That's what we saw before. How do we know that the Avot learned Torah? From the fact that the Vayosef Seni Agalot, that caused Yaakov to remember, to know for sure Yosef is still alive, that could only make sense going to the Medrash if they were learning Egla Rufa when they left. If they're learning Egla Rufa, what's that mean? They have both new Torah, they knew Sefer Devarim, they knew Matan Torah. And therefore, it's clear that they have both learned Torah, and therefore, if the next story, they have both, Yaakov studied Torah with his children, therefore, it makes sense when he sends Yehuda ahead, it's the setup of the Midrash for Torah then. So, Omar Zan, Ima Tem Yudim Beizet Peretz Farashim Eni Anim Amin Lachem. He said, if you can tell me what we were learning when Yosef left me, I'll believe you. And then, it also brought to, even Yosef knew what Peretz they were learning, and that's why he sent Agalot. He sent Yosef Agalot, Api Paro. Now the Medrash asks the question, Varach Shav Lodi Na Torah, up until this time, Torah wasn't given yet. Uktiv Avram, and then, so the Medrash answers the famous pasuk in Perech Avav and Breshit, Ekev Esher Shmavram Bakuli Vayishmor Mishmarti Mitzvotai Chukotai V'Torotai. By the way, the quote in the source sheet, it should be Perech Avav, not Perech Avzayim. It's Perech Avav pasuk Hey. It says Vayishmor Mishmarti Mechan Lamar Avram Et Torah Ekev Esher Shmavram Bakuli Vayishmor Mishmarti Mitzvotai Chukotai V'Torotai. And that pasuk, Chazal learned that they have both kept the entire Torah. Now, they kept the entire Torah, where they learned it from, is before Matan Torah. Nechad Lamar Avram the Torah. This is Rav Shimon's opinion. Rav Shimon Amer, Nasu Shtek Kil Yotav, Kishtek Kadim Shamayim, Yun Levot Torah. Who taught Avram Avin the Torah? His two kidneys turned into pitchers of water, and they taught him Torah. Now that opinion, I think, I'm hoping, I'm not sure, maybe I'm guessing. But why of all parts of the body, you could maybe find a pasuk about it, but why if all parts of the body are the kidneys, the ones that taught him Torah? No. Why do like two pitchers of water, if you know your, I guess they call it biology, or of the anatomy of the body, the liquids go through the water you drink, go through the kidney, and the kidney becomes the filter, and as the liquid goes through the kidney, it takes out the good, the nourishment, and recycles that into the body and takes out the bad. In my opinion, that analogy is exactly what Torah learning is all about. Torah learning is a process of taking the information and being able to, as they're able to differentiate between good and bad and know what's right. It's nice to say I want to do good, but knowing what's good, what's right, and what's wrong is one of the biggest challenges in being Jewish. It's one thing. It's one step in life to decide to do good. But once you decide to do good and be good, then the question is, what's the good thing to do and what's the right thing to do in certain situations? So that's not so easy. It's not enough to be a person that says, I want to do good. You have to know what good is. And in many ways, that's what Torah learning is about. It's learning and understanding, in depth and understanding, to appreciate, not just to understand it, it's going to have to do what's right, it's to know what's right, and the difference between right and wrong, and anatomy, that's pretty much the job of the kidney. So, pretty much for, yeah, the kidney is always associated with wisdom as well, like there is a... Now the other opinion, Rav Levi says, Nechmo lo matora, Shema midrachab basuk, he says, he found himself Torah, and that pretty much follows the Ramban's approach to finding God and learning Torah, that if someone uses his mind well enough, he could find God on his own. Then the famous, one minute left, the famous pasuk, how old was Abram when he found God? So one opinion, he says he was 48, and then Ketchana he was 48, we'll get to that opinion in a second. It's like he says he was 3 years old. Then Shalosh from the pasuk here, Ekev HaShifadon Bukhuri, Ekev HaGematria is 172, and Abram lived 175. Means that Lamach, Ben Shalosh Harim, he killed Boro, Ve'em HaShemedzi to keep Torah. And he, from age 3, for 172 years, Abram kept God's laws. Now, that opinion is cute, because at age 3, that's when a person begins to understand things. What's the source of 48? The Rambam brings down Abram was 40. 40 makes sense, because that's Abram reached Bina. If Abram taught himself Torah, it would make sense at age 40, when the mind is the sharpest. Anyone know why 48? We'll end with this topic. Why 48 is really interesting. Yeah, again, 40 would make sense, 30 would make sense, a round number. Why age 48 does Abram recognize that it's such a big measure? Chazal just say 48. But that Chazal assumes you know something. It assumes you do a cheshbon of the years, and you know that Abram Avinu was born in here. Yeah, exactly. He was 48 when Mikdash Bavel took place. And Abram was born 48 years, if the year Peleg died, was the year Mikdash Bavel, then Abram was born 48 years before the death of Peleg. If you figure out all the years, Abram's birth is 48 years before the death of Peleg. And if Mikdash Bavel happened, when Peleg died, then Abram was 48 years in Mikdash Bavel. So this medrash isn't coming to tell you an historical fact. This medrash is telling you that saying Abram was 48 is telling you that the events of Mikdash Bavel led Abram to find God. And that's the medrash he saw when he sees a zira that was burning. He saw a town and a tower that was burning down. He says, who's the owner of this tower? And there's got to be someone behind everything. There's always a reason for every cause. And a little line like that is not a historical statement, it's simply something much deeper. It's a insight into the connections between the events of Mikdash Bavel and Avram finding God, which fits into the theme of Chumash so nicely, because the last event in Chumash before God chooses Avram Avinu is the story of Mikdash Bavel. And there, if I want to continue the theme from before, the builders of Mikdash Bavel, the problem is Menachem Lanushen, they want to make a name for themselves, and Avram Avinu spent his whole life making a name for God, and Priya B'Shem Hashem. The last letter you can read on your own, it's just so cute. The five brothers, remember it says, Mikteach Adlakach HaMisha Anashim, he took five of his brothers and brought them to Paro. Chumash doesn't tell you who they were. So the letter says, what five did he pick? He picked the five weakest ones, because he didn't want to scare Paro away. Hey, if these guys are so strong, they might take over my country. So he took the five weakest looking brothers. Who were the five? He says, Reuven, Levi, Binyamin, Shimon, and Yisachar. Why were these the five weakest? How can we take these five brothers? He knew who was strong and who was weak. He took the five weakest. He says, he's going to take him to the army. He says, hey, these good soldiers. I'll take him, I'll conscript them. And they won't be with me with my family. So if we take the five weakest ones. Now, how do you know which ones they were? This is so cute. If you look in the brachot that Moshe Rabbeinu gives in the end of Chumash, in the Zot HaBracha, remember? With Reuven, Shimon, Levi, etc. In all those brachot, most of the brothers had a name doubled. For example, with Yehuda Amar, Yehuda's name is mentioned twice. But all the brothers whose name is only mentioned once, okay, so he brings the examples of the two ones. It doesn't bring Naphtali, because Naphtali says, Unaphtali Amar, Naphtali, it said, Ayala Shlucha. Kagon Asher, it says, Asher, Lasher Amar, Neasher Shmina Lachmo. Obert Mavinim Asher. Dan says, Lazan Amar, Dan Yedinamo. And Zuzun Amar. But the other ones The other ones, it says only their name once, and that's why. And the Brachot, whose sons are only named once, of Moshe Rabbeinu, they happen to be five, and therefore it's those five that he sends he includes Shimon, Shimon's name is even mentioned once. Basically, seven of the Brachot are brothers whose names are doubled. The other five is only one, so not at all, and those are the five that he sends in front of Paro to there's the weakest. So again, how the Medrash is searching, it doesn't say who the five were. Yeah, you could say he just picked five, you know, because I think there's a simpler reason in Shat. Simply, you know, it's too many. Too many people all in one shot to go and send somebody to Paro will be maybe overwhelmed. It's not, you know, it's not protocol. So it's picked five. Five people get to go visit the Paro. Here, the Medrash is saying there must be a reason behind why Dafka these five. He thinks Dafka the weakest ones. And how does he know who's weak? He goes to the Brachot that Moshe Rabbeinu gives. Now, if you know those Brachot, there's still a little depth there. Those Brachot that Moshe Rabbeinu gives, he follows them, they're about Nachalah and they're also about Yerusha. Remember what it says to Reuven? Reuven Amar, Yechi Reuven Bal Yimot, Bimetav Mispar. Because Reuven had volunteered to be the Chalut, to be the front line in fighting, Moshe Rabbeinu gives them a bracha that they shouldn't die being the front line. And a lot of the brachot that Moshe Rabbeinu is giving the Shvatim before he dies relate to the upcoming conquest of the land of Israel. And therefore there's a lot of military elements in those brachot. And because those brachot reflect Kibush Eretz Yisrael, Kibush HaNachalah Eretz Yisrael, that's why the order of the brachot in the Zotah Bracha is the order of the Nachalot. And therefore they reflect Kibush in conquering the land. That insight to go to those brachot which relate to military power and conquest, and then looking at those brachot, which things are double and which things are single, I think it's simply ingenious how the Medrash uses that to identify which five brothers Yosef sends to Paro. And finally, the fact that it's only after we leave Egypt, and it's those Fatim who leave Egypt, end up conquering the land of Israel and return to the land of Israel, that ties everything together very nicely. And so that was our little journey into Medrash for or Binat Midrash. I think I'm not sure about next week. We'll check with probably the class next week. There might be a break for call it holiday season, or what they call winter break. So we'll check with Torah Notion. But keep posted about next week. There'll be a note up. If you have any questions, I'll stay around for questions now, but that's our time. And sorry about the mess up in the beginning, and we have to get the desktop back to what it used to be. Any questions they can take in chatting or speak or anything.